Hi, my name is Retained Onyamuda, and welcome to another groundbreaking episode of In My 20s. In My 20s. So before we begin, please do like, share, and subscribe to the In My 20s podcast. And don't forget to share your thoughts and comments with us in the sections below. Today on the In My 20s podcast, our guest has certainly taken the road less traveled and has become one of the youngest sports anchors in South Africa. So introducing herself onto the In My 20s podcast, I'm so excited to welcome her into the In My 20s family. Here she is.
Hi, I'm Keturah Lowe. I'm 27 years old. I'm a radio and TV presenter. I'm absolutely mad about sport. I always say do it with passion or not at all. I scream at rugby matches, and I'm that lady that comes with her dog to sports events. Sorry.
Now, on every episode of the In My 20s podcast, my guests always come through with these incredible mind moments or gem moments, and this is just one of them.
Because what I've experienced as well is that, especially the older generation, they tend to, when you bring in a rugby topic and it's off air or whatever, then they tend to, they look at you and then brush you aside and start talking rugby with the boys. You know what I mean?
Sure.
For me, that was very tough.
The In My 20s podcast is split up into three sections. In the first section, we get to hear a little bit more about Keturah's career journey. In the second section, we dive into today's topic, which is all about following the unconventional career path. And finally, rounding up all three sections is a conversation about the all-encompassing 20s journey. So without further delay, let's get straight into it. So Keturah, let us tackle
yes! Sports terms!
Sports terms! I'm so excited. Before we even get into career history, I want to touch a little bit on your name. Your name is not really Keturah, because I was like, what country is that?
Yeah, it's not Keturah. Well, it's not really Keturah, but you know, you're very special now, because in my 12 years at school, it was the last day of matric that it was revealed what my full names are. That's how hidden I kept it, because I was like embarrassed about it, because it's so long and uitgerek, as we say in Afrikaans. Like, it's like a typical Afrikaans name, but my full names are Katharina Susanna Lowe. Mm-hmm. No one ever calls me that.
So how did you get to where you are right now? What did you study? Where did you study? What is your story?
Okay, so I grew up in East London and went to Hoërskool Grens. Now in Hoërskool Grens, we don't really have loads of sports big, rugby's big as it is at Afrikaans school, but it's not a very like rich school, if I can say that. So when we went to other schools, we were like, wow, like, sports is amazing. At other schools, everything else was glorious. So I always felt like I loved the team part of it. So I always competed in everything. So naturally, after school, I wanted to study something with sport in it, and I ended up at the University of Stellenbosch. Both my parents studied there as well, so it was this faraway land that I was like, oh, I have to be there. Like, there's oak trees, there's wine. Like, I studied sports science, BSc in sports science. I started with that, and then went over. I didn't finish my degree as a degree. I went over to a ETA, then I had finished my diploma.
Okay.
Because life happens. And yeah, so the studying was, I never felt comfortable in a classroom. I liked the activeness, so that's why I like the sport part. So then I went into the sport part more. And in that time, Stellenbosch is a very nice campus radio station called MFM. Mm-hmm. So I was like, wait, what if we get sports and like radio together? Like, then my love for talking and not sitting in a classroom or whatever. And then I just entered their program. You go through a few months of training, and if you fall out in the time, you fall out. Mm-hmm. But it's all on volunteer basis. So basically, while I was studying, I had to like work at 3 o'clock in the morning shift to earn your stripes, as I say in the industry, on MFM. And whatever shows you want to do, you had to put up your hand, and it's all volunteer basis. I think you get into until you get to full time. Mm-hmm. And then went to full time, did a drive show, did a breakfast show, and then managed to, they had always people coming to talk to us from like commercial radio stations and stuff. So then Prime Media, which is KFM and Cape Talk, they came to us at MFM, and then they were like, No, this is our sports editor. I was like, what? There's a sports editor? Oh, wow. A whole department of sport on a commercial radio show? Like, I never knew. Because I never knew how to get to the next level. Yes, like, you know what I mean? You're at campus station and you're working your ass off there. But, like, how do you get to that level up? So then I just asked, can I come shadow him? Because I want to see what they are doing at commercial level so we can implement it at varsity level. And then a few months later, I got an email from him asking, well, they are looking for new freelancers over the weekend. Would I like to? And I was like, yeah. So then that's how I managed to get into the commercial space.
Yes,
on KFM and Cape Talk. And then Supersport happened in 2016.
Mm-hmm. How did that... what is the story behind that?
Because everyone asked me that.
Yeah.
Because you don't get... Because then also I told this editor at EWN, I told him, no, I want to... My big dream, I always said my big dream is I want to work for Supersport one day. Because that, obviously that's for sports nuts. That's the ultimate, I think. Because you know everything's on Supersport.
100%.
It's like awesome. And then... And he always asked me... Do you know someone at Supersport? Like, how are you? Like, I didn't even think of that. I just wanted to work. I didn't think of how I was going to get there.
Yes.
I just knew I had to build the blocks. If I get there, that I needed to know how to speak in front of a camera or at least on a mic.
Wow.
I needed to have the knowledge, which I hope to get through my diploma. Because I always said you have to talk the talk as much as you walk it. So, or other way around. You have to have the knowledge.
Mm.
Even though you're talking about it, you still have to have the depth of the knowledge of knowing sport.
Yes,
I didn't play rugby.
Okay.
But we had a course and I did the course in rugby, so I know the technical parts of it. But if I had to read as much as I can, because if I were to get there, I don't want to be like, you don't know what you're talking about.
Especially being a female.
Exactly. You've got to criticize so much.
Because there are already stereotypes behind
already.
Even being a female presenter in
sport. Oh, no, she's just a pretty face there. Mm. She's just there because of the way she looks or she probably knows someone or whatever. Like, always. So I wanted to have that deep, deep knowledge of the sport I'm talking about.
I always say it's not necessarily important that you get in the room. It's important what happens when you are in the room.
Exactly.
Because now people are all eyes on you. They're listening to you. Whatever comes out of your mouth has to be of substance. Otherwise, and truth be told, is sometimes you do represent people who are not even in the room.
Yes.
As a female presenter in a predominantly male society, male industry, you represent a whole bunch of women. You stand there as a female representative.
Yes.
You know,
it's
and
not
it's
a
the
pressure.
Same with whatever room you go into.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah. So really, for me, it was very, very important to, I think maybe because I have seen people that are in roles and you're like, yes, you don't know what the heck you're talking about. I'm not saying necessarily in just in rugby. I'm saying in general, you see someone there, then you're like, And I never wanted to be, if I were to get there, I never wanted to be that person.
And so you enter this industry.
Yes.
Being, you know, we said the youngest, a female in a male-dominated industry. What, did you have any, or what were your biggest challenges, should I rather ask? Because I can imagine that there is this weight of eyes on you and people asking questions. Like, what have been the biggest challenges for you?
I think one of the challenges would be the there's no conventional route to where you want to be. So you had to kind of, you know, just figure it out and just do it. There's no other way to do radio. Mm. And then, there's opportunity. And then also go for that opportunity. Mm. The second one was, doubt. I doubted that's why I said earlier that I wanted to have all the knowledge, because if I stand there and doubt myself, everyone's already doubting you standing there in front of these wimps, these big awesome rugby players trying to tell them about rugby.
Mm. And they're big.
They are massive.
And they know knowledge from the before rugby was even a sport.
Exactly. They are rugby.
They are the rugby.
That is why it exists. It's because of these people.
Mm.
So I think one of the challenges was to get over the doubt in myself. Even though you know you have the knowledge, it's just always doubt. So I always made a point and still do reading, listening to podcasts, whatever, looking at other shows to always just know what's going on and also just obviously increase your knowledge.
You mentioned Elmer and Mots.
Yes.
Who have been quite instrumental in your journey as well. What is your relationship like with them?
Mots and Elmer, they are the only women. But... And I'm not saying we all besties and all go on wine tours together or whatever, but professionally, they are the most professional people I've ever met in terms of also, the mentoring. And they, and it's also not like a stroke in your ego. It's like, you're going to get judged.
Mm.
You need to accept it. You're going to do this. Like Mott said the other, because I also I'm really struggling because I feel like I have to prove myself every time. And she says, dude, you're a woman in sport. You're going to feel like that all the time.
Mm.
But you need to change your mentality. You need to walk into a room and know you're going to kill it every single time.
Sure.
then you deal with it, whatever comes afterwards, but you are the GOAT of all time, the greatest of all time, every time. Yes. And she said that's how she approaches everything. Like, also another thing is that what those two ladies told me, Alma and Mats, they said that they'd critique a woman on how she looks rather than what she says.
Sure.
And I was like, cool. And I know that, but then I experienced it was that I don't know what game I did, and then the one producer was like, yeah, your lipstick was too light. And I'm like, but did you hear what I had to say?
Mm.
And then the other time it was, no, you can't wear your hair loose next to the fields too. But I'm like, again, not saying not acknowledging or commenting what I said. That's the only comment I get was about my looks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not massive, like, life-changing things. I mean, I don't mind getting darker lips because I'm not a girly girl anyway, so I didn't know. But it's like, so it was rather, and it sucks because, you know, I specifically want people, like, to comment, like, and debate with me with what I have to say. Like, acknowledge that I said this or didn't say this or disagree with me, because for me it shows that you respect what I'm saying, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
If you start debating with me about the rugby stuff and not about
what you look like.
Yeah, because what I've experienced as well is that especially the older generation, they tend to, when you bring in a rugby topic and it's off air or whatever, then they tend to they look at you and then brush you aside and start talking rugby with the boys, you know what I mean?
Sure.
For me, that was very tough because I'm a sensitive person. Then also I'm like, what the hell?
So
like,
what do you do then? I mean, because obviously you can't break down and cry.
Yeah, that's the thing. I go cry at home.
Exactly.
Call my mom, being a little girl. But I stand there and then I just try and... It's like you force yourself in, kind of.
Yeah.
And I don't know how else to do it.
But you have to have the thick skin for that because, I mean, as you're mentioning now, the sexism, I'm assuming, is very apparent.
Well.
Very alive and well.
Yeah. I feel that to an extent they have to open their, it's up to them.
Mm.
Like, you can say, oh, you're a woman, not too being too extra, blah, blah, blah. But you are turning away when I talk about rugby.
Mm.
You've not even given me a chance to fail. Like, in terms of, you've not given me a chance. I'm allowed to fail as well.
Yeah.
Because guys are allowed to fail. Mm. They're allowed to look like chops, and then everyone forgives them and everyone goes on.
Yeah, because they're men.
Yeah. And you're not even allowing me the respect or acknowledging me, which for me is like, the worst thing, like, because it's just like, I don't know, it's just, it stabs you right in the gut and like in the heart. Like, it's horrible. It's not necessarily people you work with. I feel that the guys that I work with, the older rugby players that are on the panels or whatever, they're very accepting to, if you're in that environment, I feel they know you in that environment for a reason.
Yes, yeah.
It's more like the external people and the people watching, whatever.
Mm. So I am not going to lie, I'm a little bit jealous of your career, just in terms of like all the hot men that you see on a daily basis, the hot men that you interview.
They're gorgeous.
Like the tall men. But what is that like? Like waking up every day, going to these places, interviewing like the most well-known rugby players in our country. What is that like?
It's really a dream come true. And I keep saying it, like, I really love, I love what I do, and I love the sport. I love how it brings people together. I love what it brings out in people, even though there are fights and whatever on the field and get heated. But the sportsmanship is always great between the teams, always shake hands afterwards. Like little things that in sport that people should take into life, I believe. So it's really a dream come true. Because it was my dream to work for SuperSport.
Yeah.
I'm living it at the moment. But now it's also about leveling. Now what do we do next? And how do we do what we do very well? What's nice is that from when I started to now, it's only been 3 years, which is, I'm still a baby in the industry.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that those guys that I interviewed maybe at Varsity Cup level are now playing for the Springboks.
Oh, nice. So you've grown with them.
So, yes. And it's nice because we're all a big team. Mm. Like, it's like cool to see how their journeys have grown and vice versa. Yeah. And also how people aren't all cuck. Like they are nice people in this industry and on the rugby field. And it's nice to see also how they start opening up. A rugby player that's 19, guess it's the hardest interview you'll ever do. Like they don't speak. They are like,
I'm just here to play rugby.
They literally here to only play rugby. Mm-hmm. And then you see them 3 years later and suddenly it's like word vomit. I'm like,
oh wow.
But then afterwards I always tell them, it's so cool to see how you've grown. Because unfortunately for them, they think they just need to play rugby, but you're public figures.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're at a Currie Cup level or whatever level, you're going to have to learn how to speak. And I think it's just that you also don't have to over, like, just like us from the camera perspective, we overthink, well, I overthink things. They do too. So they're also just humans. Yeah.
And that's interesting because their focus is
on their job.
Rugby. It's like, I'm here, this is
but
what
like,
I'm
we
doing.
Have to pay taxes. That's all. I don't think it was part of the bid. It's part of the job. Yeah.
And you're talking about 19-year-olds. I must say, like, South Africa's, like, high school rugby level, I think, is one of the craziest.
Yeah.
It, obviously in the world, but I sometimes feel like it's a little bit bigger than our national know, teams.
Yeah, it is to an extent. It's massive. No, schoolboy rugby. Remember, we've got in the Western Cape, we've got the pole derby between Pole Boys and Paddle Gym, which is the biggest schoolboy rugby derby in the world.
Wow.
And I mean, we are technically a third world country on the, what do they say, gatkant van die wereld. Like, we're not even, like, you're not glorious in Europe or whatever. And we've got the biggest schoolboy rugby tournament in the world, or derby in the world.
Yeah.
And then something like Craven Week is also like, we have international refs coming to ref at Craven Week, which is the under 18 schoolboy tournament in the country, because they don't have it in the other place in the world. Like, it's so unique
that
and so
level.
So it's cool to. And then, but the flip side is people get extra, like parents getting, trying to sign their kids off to endorsements at the age of 17 and playing professional rugby right after school.
It's crazy.
It's insane. Like, that's what the older generation of rugby players, the retired Oaks, are saying. Like, yes, it's great, but get your degree too.
Yes.
Like,
no, it's insane.
You have to. You can't just rely on rugby because there's an expiration date.
Yeah. It's like they'll be telling you, like, from birth. The story literally, will be like, from birth, you're going to be a rugby ball.
Literally.
And you're just like, oh my gosh, that's intense.
Did you think of it... like 1995, that's the sport that brought everyone together.
Mm.
Like when Madiba handed Francois Pienaar, our Springbok captain at that time, the World Cup trophy, and he lifted it in Ellis Park, it just, a nation was united. I'm getting goosebumps as I say. Like, that was the sport. So I understand the patriarchs and like, that comes through, the trots that comes through. But it gets, it's unfortunate that. And it's, I'm going to blame the parents at school level because you need to guide your kid. And if you're going to be going to put that pressure on that kid, he's going to want to just play rugby because that's what you want and that's what you're pushing for. And now you have to go make money as a rugby player. You've got potential. I've seen parents, so on a rugby field, obviously they switch sides at halftime. There was one parent that literally, wherever his kid was playing on the field, he would walk to.
Yeah.
Then switch sides, he would walk to. And I could see him screaming at his kid. I'm like, this kid, literally, and I know that kid's going to get a tongue lashing afterwards from his dad. Like, it's a bit, so I wish parents would just let the kids play.
Yeah.
Don't
let them be kids.
You let them be kids, and if they want to pursue it, they do. But then pursue it where they can get a degree as well. It's very, very important on a rugby level, in my opinion.
Have you ever been starstruck?
Yes. Okay. I was actually talking about this the other day. Is I had to stand in for another presenter on a Super Sports digital rugby program called In Touch.
Okay.
I shouldn't say this. Now you're going to go watch it. But anyway, is Skalk Berger.
Okay.
He is one of those legendary rugby players, but he's still like young enough. He's not like the super, he's like, he played for the Springboks the other day, but he's just epic, man.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
just like so cool. And I had to interview him now for 20 or 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was, he's so chilled, but he's still Skalk Berger. So for me, I think that was the most starstruck I've been. And the irony is I've been with Super Bowl 3 years now, so I've interviewed a bunch of people. But now, I think maybe the other times I was so focused on just saying the right words and saying, now I was able to kind of sit back and enjoy it. And then it was Skalk Berger. It's like, you can't get comfortable.
And the worst interview you've ever had, where you just look back and you're just like, that was rock bottom.
Probably at the start. My first season was Super Sport. I had an interview. Then, obviously, you learn little things when you... Like, I didn't know... Or I just trusted a floor manager with all getting all the info.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the floor manager is someone that communicates with everyone to make the production run on the floor. So, gets the interviews, gets the banners up, make sure the refs go on time. Blah, blah, blah. So, they do a lot of stuff. So, I was waiting for the captain's name. Because you always interview the captain post-match. And I was waiting for the name, and last minute he gave me a name. And I was standing there, congratulations to, I don't know, Western Province for winning this match 70-20 or whatever. And he had a chat about the match, is captain so-and-so. The Oak's like, my name is, no, wrong name. But this is all happening on air.
Oh, wow.
And I was just like... You could see I was like this, and I looked straight at the floor manager, but this is all live. And I was like, And then afterwards, he was very up. The captain was very upset. He's like, "Don't people know?" I'm like, "No, it's not your. It's not, it's not your papers were right. Everything." And I felt like shit because also being a captain is an honor, and I'm getting the captain's name. Like, I don't know what name. And then the floor manager came to me afterwards and said, "Sorry, but the problem is it already
happened. Too late.
It felt horrible, and it just felt the rest of the interview felt shit because of that. And he didn't like me. I don't think he still likes me to this day. That was a horrible one. And then. I had to do my first broadcast was right after US Funda Vestas and passed away. But then the thing is, again, Varsity Cup's a very happy, fun tournament, and now it was this dull thing. And it was my first broadcast, and I had to literally chat to people about US Funda Vestas and at Varsity Cup where students are drunk and whatever. It wasn't nice. It's just not nice because it's such a somber moment in the rugby community, and then you're trying to be like, "Ah, it's Varsity Cup," but also US Funda Vestas and died. So it was a bit. Yeah, it was a bit rough.
So I. I'm single.
Yes.
And I have a lot of single friends.
Okay.
No, I'm not going to ask you for anyone's name. Don't worry. You're like, I got to it. Okay, cool. We are. But I want to know. So if I'm watching a rugby game, because I went to watch rugby a couple of Saturdays ago with friends. But like, yes, there's the screaming and the shouting, but I really would like to impress, you know, people with my knowledge.
Okay, great.
What are a couple of really good phrases in terms of rugby and like, what do they mean?
Okay, we can go. So you know what a try is, obviously, when he goes over the line.
You try again.
Don't say that. You're never going to get someone. So embarrassing.
Is he going to try? I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I know.
She's not. No, I'm joking. So you know what a try is. Let's get serious.
You score a try.
Yes, and that's 5 points, eh?
Okay, got it.
And then a conversion. Do you know what that is? So it's when the guy kicks. Now, after there's a try, there's always a kick.
Okay.
That's a conversion. So you can say, "Oh, we're getting ready. Oh, he's setting up for the conversion.
Setting up for a conversion. Love it. Got it.
So it's simple, but it's a fake. It's like, because conversion is a tough word. Yeah. Like, you don't know it. It's not a normal term.
What is he converting?
So then he gets it over. Then if he gets it over, he's converted the try.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's 7 points.
Mm.
So then if there's no try and he kicks, then it's a penalty.
Okay.
Okay. So then it's not a conversion.
Okay.
Okay. So you can say, or you can say something about a try is that, oh, he got over the whitewash.
Mm.
That's the white line.
Okay. Stunning.
Scrum. You know what scrum is?
When they get together like a ball.
Yes.
And they're all like locking.
Yes. There we go. Perfect. Stunning. Perfect.
Is
and
lock a rugby term?
Scrum. Yes. A lock's over two locks in a team.
Mm.
So they're the jumpers who jump in the line. Or the flanks or six and seven can also jump. Or the eighth man. So there's a lot of people that can jump.
Too many
but
numbers.
The locks. Okay. Too many numbers. Yeah. There are eight people in the scrum though.
Got it.
So eight. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the scrum off, which is number nine, usually a tiny Oki, he throws in the ball.
Okay.
Okay, so maybe you can also say when it happens fast, you can say, "Oh, that scrum have got the ball out fast. Great stuff from the scrum. You want that from a scrum half.
Cool.
Get the ball out
you
fast.
You want that from a scrum half.
Get it out fast.
And if you don't want that from a scrum half, he should be fired.
Yes.
Who let him on the team?
No, sub him. No one likes refs. So you can just say, "Oh, this ref," and then someone will respond.
No one likes refs.
No one likes refs. No one but no one wants to do it.
Okay.
But there has to be a ref. But no one likes the ref. So.
I was probably saying was the ref even watching the game?
Yes.
They love that because it's obviously they're watching, but clearly they weren't.
Yes, girl. Yeah, like that's perfect. Yes. Yes. Was the ref even watching the game? So I've got that. Oh, if they're on the attack, and maybe the ball's in the middle of the field,
and they're trying
to get it to the wing because the wings are obviously on the outside.
Yes, got you.
Yeah, and you can see like they looks like the other team is not going to be able to stop them. You go swing the ball if you can see the wing is open.
Oh.
So you have to go. That's a bit of concentration there.
Swing the ball.
Yeah, because
they have to literally
get it out to the wing.
Stunning.
Swing.
Couture, we are coming to my favorite part of the podcast, and that is all about the 20s journey and the quarter life crisis and all things 2-0 plus other numbers. So if you were to summarize your 20s, how would you summarize your 20s?
Unforgettable.
Mm-hmm.
Dang. Maybe dang. You can just say
dang.
It's dang. Yeah. Musha learning curve.
Mm.
Unexpected, I think. Okay. Also, yeah.
Did you ever suffer from the quarter life crisis?
Yes.
Did you ever have a quarter life crisis?
Yes.
What was the crisis and how did you come out of it?
So I liked my 25 year because then I just started at Super Sports, so everything was glorious and like you were in a high, on a high, but then you realize now, okay, I'm 25 and other people are also getting those highs. They're also getting great stuff or whatever, which is cool. But now I was like, what's next? So I'm like, oh, damn it. Like, what's next? Like, you are there now. What's next? And also you feel, I don't feel like I did everything I needed to do in my 20s. It feels like I was suddenly old. It felt like I didn't go, I don't know, hike Table Mountain every weekend or I didn't do enough in my 20s. They say comparison is the thief of all joy. And it's true. I had to stop comparing on social media or thinking. And also, actually, I think deep down is that I attach a lot of value to a degree. And I know this sounds lame, a four-year degree where you walk on that stage and you get it, whatever. I didn't realize how much it bothered me that I didn't complete a degree. Both my parents are far in... My dad's a philosopher, but like a professor of philosophy. My mom did a degree in psychology. So they're like legit academics, or it felt like that. But I didn't realize how much value. I thought I was not valuable if I didn't have a degree. I don't know why. I had to deal with that too. I didn't realize that. It bothered me immensely. And also I had very glorious friends that are biokineticists now, and accountants, CAs, people working with investment banking, like fabulous, like degreed people. And I wasn't one of them.
Yeah.
I was like a completely different, unconventional route. I think I didn't realize how that bothered. I'm okay with being unconventional. Didn't realize it bothered me that much. I felt not good enough.
And how do you feel about that now?
I'll still work through it. It's weird because I'm pushing my sister. No, you can't dope now. You need to get your degree because you are the one that needs to get it. Yeah. But no, I think I'm okay with it. I think it will always be, I'll always have to work or just be like, you're okay, you're enough, you're fine, even without it. Yeah. But then you see people around you that are also in unconventional spaces and it's okay. Yeah. Like, also the world we live in, it's okay.
Yeah.
I don't know why that was specifically why I made me feel not good enough. Yeah. I don't know.
But I think it's also part of your journey. And part of your story even. So when you are on stage and people look at you and they're just like, oh my word, she's done it. And she's X and she's Y. I think it's also that thing that makes us human. Like sometimes the things that make us feel the most insignificant, or the things that we cry about are the things that connect us most to human, to other humans, and give us that, that connection to be like, we're actually in this
relatable,
together. We've all got something that we feel we're not good enough for.
Yeah, I think that's why I became still working on a bit okay with it, is that no one, if I look at you, I don't know what you have or what you don't have, and that's part of my journey. Mm. It's part of my self-discovery. Like, I didn't get a degree, why? Did something else, or it put me in another way, maybe. And I think also maybe what bothers me about that is that I did it, I could have.
Okay.
Maybe that's why the panic kicked in at 25, is why I was like, I could have done this. I could have done that better. I could have done this, and now it's too late.
Yeah.
I think that's probably why. But then the diploma worked out, at least.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that, as I said, attached a lot of value to that degree, and I didn't realize how much it affected me mentally, not getting it.
Yeah. And healing from that as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I think we still do that.
Because you're okay. Because from outside, you maybe look like for someone else, I look like a mutual success.
Yes.
But for you, do you feel like, I don't have a degree, I'm not successful. Yeah. But then it was like, well, dude, you look...
That's okay, like you're doing it. That's the thing, is you're doing it. And I think, especially in our industries as well, is you can take anything. I studied film and media. There have been many times in my career where I was just like, oh my word, I'm not earning as much as I should be. Should I have studied law, which I probably wouldn't have been able to? Should I pursue something else?
More traditional,
or even whether it's living with someone or not living with someone. I think if you are following your passion, I do think one, things happen for a reason and teaching you different lessons, and they definitely help you to connect and relate to people in a different way.
Yeah.
But I also think things happen for your path for a reason. Like yours is so unique. And that's what makes you unique, and that's your story. No one else can copy paste and say, I have the same story as you.
Yeah.
And that's what sets you apart, and that's what will, put you in the spotlight and take you to glory. It's like, this is her story, which I think is beautiful, and that it's unconventional. If you had done the conventional part, this is the other thing, and... Yeah, that's it. If you had done the conventional part, everyone would think that one and two and three
exactly,
and
there would be the blueprint.
That is not our industry, and that's not how you succeed.
Yeah, that's what my chatted to my mom a lot, but she just said, but Couture, then you wouldn't have had time for MFM. You wouldn't have had time to maybe fly up to Joburg and go do the audition.
Yeah.
They would not have understood you taking off to go do a rugby match in some weird dorpie in South Africa. Mm. Like, you would have dorped, or they would have not acknowledged it or something. Like, you wouldn't have been able to do what you did. And then what if you were unhappy?
Yeah.
Then you would have missed out on something else.
Yeah.
And because I wasn't happy in class, in the classes I was doing, but I was there because all my friends, like, it was so nice to just have that team, that fellowship, or I don't know what you call it. Like, everyone was there, and it was nice because everyone's going to class together. Everyone's doing it. I like the structure, but it just, maybe I was just not happy in that sphere. Yeah. That's why I didn't care as much as I should have.
Yeah.
Or thought I should have, at least. Yeah. Mm. But it's unconventional, you're right. Mm. Completely. It's like, if the one thing didn't happen, then this should have happened, or this would have happened and not had happened. Yeah.
Yeah, you've had a very interesting and inspiring journey, definitely, to get to where you are and the person you are. But I want to know, what advice do you have for people in their 20s at the moment who are following the unconventional path and who are struggling with that, the self-doubt or the self-talk or is this it? Should I be doing something different? Questioning everything, basically.
Yeah.
What advice would you have for them?
Don't compare your journey to someone else's. And again, probably very big cliche, but especially in our industry, an unconventional industry, is that sometimes people that start after you might end up in places you should have been already or could have been already, because you always feel like, because we always want to push ourselves.
Yeah.
You could have been there, but you cannot compare your journey to someone else's journey.
Yeah.
You're going to make yourself mad. And then also have fun, man.
Mm.
And there's no point in doing all of this and just being mislick or being like in a bad mood because you have to work and whatever. Enjoy it. Have fun at work. Have fun in your personal life. Enjoy it as well. Because you're in your 20s, man. We are not old people, even though we feel like it. Have fun.
Thank you so much, Couture, for coming onto today's show and sharing your journey with us. There were so many incredible mind moments and gem moments on today's show. But one that I particularly want to point out is where you opened up a little bit about your unconventional career path. And for me, that was so pivotal, because I think in life we often think that this is the path, this is the ladder that I need to choose and I need to get to X. But in life, there are so many different roads that one can take that lead to our dreams and our destinies. And finally, thank you to everyone who listened to today's episode of the In My 20s podcast. Please don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. So we will catch you same time, same place, right here on In My 20s. In my 20s. In my 20s. How old are... Ooh. Okay, maybe no song today. We won't do a song today. Okay. Bye.